Accession number 26844, Reel 5.
Mr. Blake, Reel 5. We're talking, about, I think, next about when you moved up to the Maros Line. And whether you remember anything of the Battle of Maros that went on, or whether, I mean, obviously in your role, you might not see so much of it.
Yeah, there was one outstanding thing that happened there. It was one of our company met Montgomery and some of the generals or brigadiers or whatever at the Maros Line, and Monty described the battle and what they were going to do. That was an interesting feature there.
What, a briefing?
A briefing, yeah. He took them all through what he was going to do in the battle, and they thought it was a wonderful thing for them to happen, you know, something that lasts with them for the rest of their lives. There wasn't really a lot of happened to me during the Maros Line thing. I mean, we were static most of the time, just waiting to go forward. And it was just straight through the Maros Line. Eventually, on the way through the Maros Line, I did see a grave of a man called Hunt, Guardsman Hunt. And when I got to Italy and found somebody else who knew him, told me that was actually a fellow who used to live in the street I lived. Georgie Hunt had been killed. He was in the Grenadier Guards and got killed there. Straight through the Maros Line onto Enfield, and really the war was about over then. There wasn't really a lot more happening then.
And anything else? So what happened when you got to Enfield?
Well, Enfield, I think the plains just opened there, and there was no defence at all. The Germans were then biting in quite a big route. They were just running like mad then. Because at that time, one of the jobs that we did have a lot to do then through the Maros Line was, of course, the amount of prisoners that we brought back, mainly Italians and quite a lot of Germans. But we used to carry 30 Italians in the back of the truck and one guard and sometimes no guard. But if it was Germans, we carried 20 and sometimes two guards, as they still had quite a lot of arrogance about them, you know. And one officer said to me when I said that, you know, well, okay, the war's over for you. He said, oh, yeah, but the war's not over. He said, yeah, we may have lost this battle, he said, but Germany will win the war, no doubt. So that was typical of their arrogance, really.
Now, what did you do when you got to Enfield? I mean, the unit, what did the unit do?
Well, we just leagued up there and then start, well, and just crept forward up to Tripoli and Tunis, you know, just started runs up to different places, you know. So the war was virtually over. On one of my trips up to there, I was carrying a load of watermelons, and on the way back with the watermelons, I don't know how many I had on there, but the truck broke down, and one of our blokes went by, and he said, oh, well, I'm not going to pull you, you know, you've got all that load on. So I said, okay, but he said, I'll get somebody up to you. Well, nobody came up that day, and I slept the night by the vehicle, head-on shoes as boots, because the Arabs used to nick our boots if they saw them laying about, and rifle by my side. But in the morning I woke up, and about half of my load of melons had disappeared. It's during the night the Arabs had come in and pinched them, but there you are, no great loss really.
So what happened next then?
We're just doing running about jobs, and when the war finished, of course, there was, I suppose, hundreds of trucks of all different makes and sizes, and lots of Italian vehicles, and we were always short of tyres, so we cannibalised them for at least their tyres and any other bits that the workshops felt they could use in it on our own trucks. I think that probably got us out of a hole, because there was a long lines of communications at that time, and I don't think they'd started using the ports as much as they wanted to, because perhaps the mining. So lines of communication were long, and this made it important for us to do that. On the night of when Germany had packed in, the we'd got a lorry
just
load
just
of
in North Africa. No, I mean,
just the North African war. Somebody had got hold of a lorry load of Italian vino, and the sergeant made it give us, so we could all fill our water bottles up with it, which we did. And I didn't like the taste of it, so I drank it all very quickly, and I got in a terrible state. I tried to get back into the truck to sleep. Every time I went to get back in, it appears the front of the truck seemed to go up and tip me out again. Eventually, I got in, got to my bed at the front of the truck, and then felt sick, got to the back and fell out the truck again. So that was my memories of the first night of the ceasing of the war in Africa.
Were you involved in any of the preparations for the Italian campaign? You know, they were going to invade first Sicily in July and then Italy in September 43.
No, I don't think we were involved in any, as far as I can remember, any particular preparations, because we just carried on, I suppose, doing some of the jobs that we normally done, you know. But there was a big job with the prisoners. I mean, I don't know how some of them, I mean, you know, how we fed them, or they couldn't have been very well looked after, I don't think, quite honestly, because there were so many of them, you know, I mean. And the Germans were okay because the Italians were okay because they were quite pleased to be out of the war and quite happy to be prisoners and didn't mind going without their vino, perhaps. But the Germans, they were still quite confident that, you know, that they would, the war would be over in their favour.
So what happened next then? Is the next thing the invasion of Italy? Because you didn't go to Sicily, did you?
No. We got on Sousse. We went to Sousse and got on an American LST, that's a landing ship tanks, to go to Sicily. And one of the things they gave us when we got on was a book that told us all about Sicily and what to expect. But when halfway there, that the war in Sicily folded up or went better than we expected. So they decided we would reroute to Taranto.
Now, what was it like on that? It was a landing ship tank, was it?
Yeah, landing ship tank, yeah. So, you know, we drove on and that quite easily, really. And, of course, the food was pretty good. I mean, because, you know, they seemed to have plenty of fresh foods and things like that, and which we've, you know, been living out of tins for so long. So, no, we wish the voyage had been longer, I think, because I think it was only a couple of days it took. Anyway, we pulled into Taranto Harbour, and there was the mast sticking out of two battleships that had been sunk, I don't think, the year previously by some of our Air Force or Royal Navy planes, been torpedoed. And also quite a lot of bodies in the outer harbour, which we learnt from the Italians afterwards, the civilians, that there was a big ship left with quite a lot of Italian troops on to escape the Germans, because by then Italy had surrendered. And the Germans had come over and bombed these ships, and that's what all the bodies were about. We had to get into the inner harbour, and it wasn't safe, so we had some airborne on board, or on board one of the other ships, that got into small boats and zoomed into the inner harbour. Now, to get the inner harbour was through like a swing bridge, and wasn't very wide. And when eventually came the time for us to go through, these airborne people were lining each side of the bridge, backs to us, facing away, because in case there was any trouble, I suppose, just to protect the ship through. But we went through with no problem. But, you know, the Italians anyway wouldn't have given us any problems, as we found out later, because they're not a very warlike nation, really, and they was quite happy the war was over. And so were we pleased that we was in Italy, because, you know, there was loads of fresh fruit, you know, there was grapes and plums and apples and oranges, and, you know, which were just a few, because we've got some lira before we went, and just a few lira, so cheap, it was ridiculous. But we then...
What sort of a reception generally did you get from the Italian civilians?
Oh, they were quite pleased we'd arrived, and the war was over for them. That, you know, that's what they kept on telling us, that the war, you know, was the war finished, and...
They were friendly.
Oh, yeah, very, very friendly. Oh, yeah. The girls especially were very friendly. Too friendly for some of the blokes, I think. But no, they were quite good, I say. And we settled into some barracks, naval barracks on the front in Sorrento. And our trucks were, I don't know, a quarter of a mile up a hill, you know, on a big, big open space up there, which we used to have to go out and do guards up there. But our main job then for the next about three months, was offloading the ships in Sorrento Harbour and just taking the ammunition, petrol, whatever, up to two ports of Bari and Brindisi. Seemed to be, we ran to other places in between, but they seemed to be the main places we went to. And we was also employed in picking up local labour, because the army, there were several jobs the army wanted doing.
Well, tell us about the unloading the ships. Would you actually unload the ships, or would you just carry the produce?
Well, we would just pull up alongside the ship, and the derrick, the big cranes on the ship, would lift it out and dump it at the back of the truck, and then we would physically, perhaps a couple of us and some of this local labour, would take the stuff off of these big pallets and put them on the trucks, and away we'd go. We stopped.
And what was it? Was it ammunition?
It was foods and petrol and ammunition, you know, whatever came up we carried. And then we were directed, when we was loaded, by I suppose it must have been like the harbour master. No, not the harbour master. Well, I can't think of what they called the man, LOC command or something like that. And he was telling us where we'd got to go with them. We was doing this for about 8 weeks, and then...
What about the second part, the Italian labour? What were you doing with them? Were you picking them up or what?
Yeah, we was picking them up mainly from the heel of Italy. I think a place comes to mind called Roccafossato. And taking them into Sorrento to do, well, working on the docks and lots of other jobs they were doing for the army, you know. I think that some were employed in our workshops to keep our vehicles going, you know. So, yeah, there was lots of work done, and they were quite good workers as well, really. Everybody seemed quite happy with them.
So what happened next? After about 3 months?
After about 2 months... an Italian transport company arrived and took our trucks over. Well, they didn't immediately take them over. They just rode alongside the driver, whichever was driving. You had one sitting beside you, which I think was great for me because it increased my interest in Italian. And I think I was quite good at speaking Italian in about a month, because when you're with somebody who's you're trying to speak to in English and they're in Italian, I mean, it's probably a good way to learn the language. But mainly to tell them how we done things, or to show them how we done things. And we were advised to let them do most of the driving. Because at first, being a right-hand drive vehicles, and they was used to left-hand drive vehicles, it was a bit bumpy at first. But no, they were quite a good old crowd, really. And then at the end of the about the 3 months we were there, this was, I believe, just before Christmas we left Italy. And we handed them all over to them, you know. We had Bedford trucks then, Bedford three-tonners.
So what happened then?
Well, we went, got on a ship called the Bergensfield, which they tell me was quite a big, fast ship in the before the
Bergenfeld.
War. The Bergensfield, which was a Norwegian ship. And... yeah, we got on that, and I, a couple of days before we were due to get on it, I had this great big boil came up on my arm, and I went down to see the MO and saw the orderly there, and he said to me, well, you know, he said, I think you're going soon, and she said, because we didn't quite know where we were going, it could have been going out to Burma, I think, and that's what somebody said at one time. And he said, well, really, he said, you've got choices that we can... treat that area, he said, but if I start treating it, he said, I don't think you'll be able to get on that boat. So I said, okay, well, I'll suffer it. So immediately I got onto the ship, I reported to the MO, and I can remember he stood back a little, looked at it, and said, oh, you should have had this treated beforehand. He said, right, I'll lance it, and all this stuff come out and squirt all over him. Dear me, what a mess. And then I had 2 days in my hammock, because we had hammocks on that boat, and I was just excused duty for 48 hours. I think there was about five or six ships in that Conwheely thing, didn't know.
So what happened when you got into Glasgow? That'd be still December, wouldn't it? Or was it after?
That was January then. I believe that was the beginning of January.
So you'd been at sea over Christmas?
Yeah, we was at sea over Christmas. I think it was the beginning of January when we got back to Glasgow. And I came off the old Bergensfield and on a train down to Cambridge. We got a train down to Cambridge, and where there were some wonderful billets in Hills Road, where we had wonderful food and wonderful mattresses. It was actually a wonderful billet for a couple of weeks. I should say that one of the things in Italy was all that wonderful fresh fruit. And when we got back to England in January, it was probably a thing we did miss about Italy, was all that lovely fruit that we could get. So we had a time in, spent some time in Cambridge, and then moved a Templar. While I was in Cambridge, Templeton, of which it had been started, Ella Mann, was disbanded. So we lost our sergeants and our corporals, and it was a bit sad. They all went off to other units. Most of the corporals and sergeants were promoted, went off to strengthen other companies. Because that was all down to experience.
So that was your platoon, Templeton?
Yeah, Templeton.
So
yeah.
What were you in now?
So then I was in 9, so they formed 9 platoon, reformed a 9 platoon, of which I joined. We went then up to, I think somewhere up near Milton Keynes, to pick up these tipper lorries. We had Dennis tipper lorries we picked up there. And well, ran about with them for a little while and finished up on Salisbury Plain.
What's a tipper lorry?
The back tipped up.
Which make were they?
Dennis's. Dennis tipper lorries.
And what were they like as lorries?
It was awful. You spit on the grass and the wheel spans. So what no good they were going to do in the conditions that was expected to be in France or wherever. I don't know how it was. But there you are. That's what they gave us.
So you were, what were you transporting with them then?
I don't think we'd done a lot of transporting, I think.
So where were you based?
We was on Salisbury Plain for some time. And then probably the beginning of June, we went down to Brentwood. We was in the fields near Brentwood. And there, we waterproofed the vehicles.
Tell us how you did that, because people don't understand it now, how it works. So.
No, well, what we had to do was all electrical parts on the vehicle, i.e. the battery terminals, the leads in and out of the coil, the plugs, any other bits on the vehicle that we didn't worry about the lights, but any other bits. So what we had to do was add all this greasy asbestos looking stuff with a load of old gunge, and you wrap some waterproof material round the plugs and then slopped all this gunge on top of them, so that was onto the plugs and onto the leads into the coil and the main coiling out the coil, and then for the carburetor, so that we could still take in air if it was underwater, there was a hole drilled in the top of the bonnet, and through this, a pipe was put through, which was, I suppose, a couple of inches in diameter, and this pipe was fed onto the top of the carburetor, and out through the bonnet, and up to the top of the cab. And we fixed it at the top of the cab. So that if we went into water, well, we was expected to drive the vehicles off the ship, off the landing craft, and so that we could go through any water and we'd still take the air in. After doing this, which was quite a big job, then we loaded up with 100-pound shells. We got a big
Still tipper lorries then?
Yeah, still tipper lorries. And we got a big brown paper and tar sheet, of which we laid into the back of the lorry and put all this these 100-pound shells in. I don't quite know how many we carried, but, quite a few, I suppose. And then we covered them all over with this brown paper sheeting. We wrapped it all around them and then sealed it with all tape so the water wouldn't get into them there. I don't quite know how much that would have damaged the shells, but that was what we had to do. And then we went on to the central reservation of the A127, the South End Road. And we stayed there perhaps for a night or two, I don't really remember. But on the night of the 5th of June, we were told to get ready to move. And sometime during the night and the morning, we moved down to Tilbury and was put on a Liberty ship, an American Liberty ship. This meant lifting the trucks on and, we just sat in the trucks. They lifted us up and put us down in the hold. And then sometime...
Was that a difficult process, loading up when this was a Liberty? I mean, how did you actually do it?
No problems at all. What do you mean, going onto the ship?
Yeah, I mean...
No, we just... If I remember right, we just drove onto this, like, wire netting stuff that had a hook at each end, and they just hooked it onto one of the cranes of the ship, and, we was on, and in no time at all. And
And this was the 5th, you reckon?
That was the night of the 5th, yeah, or early on the morning of the 6th, you know. It was during that night, 5th to 6th night, that we had some movement. All the trucks went into the right down to the bottom of the ship, or the bottom, and then the first deck up went on to them, and all the trucks did. And then we slept on the one deck below the top deck. If that makes sense, that's where we slept, and so the next thing I remember was being there. By now, we still didn't know whether the invasion was started or whether this was just some stunt that they were syncing up with some practice.
So you'd had no briefing at all.
We had no briefing at all, no, and we went round Ramsgate and Margate. And then up towards the Straits of Dover. And as we approached the Straits of Dover, on our left-hand side, that was a French sign, there seemed quite a lot of activity. And these were Royal Navy destroyers, corvettes or whatever, were laying smoke screens so that as we went through the Straits of Dover, that the Germans couldn't see us and shell us, which was great, really, because... and, of course, there was lots of our aircraft above looking after us, so it was quite safe, really. And then we went up to just near Portsmouth, still in the English Channel, and then done a left turn. Now, I did always wonder why we didn't have any, appear to have any ships or boats around us, but I did read, my brother-in-law was in the Navy and read one of his Navy books, and in fact there was quite a lot of shipping, Navy ships, out of sight that we didn't see that was keeping any troublesome E-boats or that away. And then on the evening of the 6th, we pulled up outside Gold Beach and next to what I think they called a monitor ship, which was a big ship with two 20-inch guns on it. So what with that and the destroyers and battleships firing and these great big boom-booms all night long, we didn't really sleep very much that night. Only one memory I had, and that was a German must come over and strafe the decks. And one of our corporals called out, there was somebody, some of the people jumped up and went to run on deck. This, I think, was perhaps through fear. And I can remember one of our corporals yelling out, "Stay where you are, stay where you are." And I think that reassured not only them, but reassured us. So in the morning, as daylight came, they started unloading the trucks. This meant we sat in the truck and the crane lifted us up and put us onto a LCT, which was a smaller landing craft tanks. The other was LST, landing ship tanks. This was LCT, landing craft tanks. And I think there was probably about six vehicles got on that. And so, and then we started our engines when we got there. See, that was all right. They were going all right. And then we got to near to the shore, and the ramp went down, and then we had to drive off. Well, unfortunately, where the aircraft had stopped, I was the first one off, and where the aircraft, where the LCT had stopped, it stopped near where had been a shell hole. So as I drove off, I went into the shell hole. The craft, the LCT then realised...
Is it LCT or LST?
The LST was a big ship that held quite a lot of it. And LCT was a small one, you know, I think it held about six trucks. And these were assault craft, really, I suppose.
Sorry, I should, yeah. Sorry, Karen, so you ran into this...
So I ran into this shell hole and got a bit stuck there. So the LCT moved a bit to one side, seeing as I was in a bit, had a bit of a problem there. And then somebody came out from the shore with a big line, like a hose or something like that, and hooked it onto the front, and I was pulled in well, in record time. I mean, it was so slick and well organised. I mean, these people were there for exactly this reason. And then onto the beach and waved to get off the beach. We all had a map reference to go to. And
Before you go on... What about the beach? What could you see on the beach? I mean, they'd only landed the day before. What could you see?
Well, a few busted vehicles, a couple of bodies, obviously, on the beach were covered over, perhaps waiting to be picked up by somebody. But the priority, I think, because there was only a narrow gap to get through to get off the beach, and I think that was being devoted to vehicles getting off the beach and onto the roads, you know, behind there.
Was any fire on the beach? I mean, any shells?
Oh, well, yeah, there was noise going on, I mean, but, you know, preoccupied with your own problems, I suppose. And, yeah, there was lots of... our guns were still firing, and there was still quite a lot of aircraft overhead.
But no German firing?
Well, yeah, there were Germans, but it was only spasmodic. I think they were running away anyway.
So what about the rendezvous? What?
So I had to rendezvous with this gun or this battery of 100 pounders. I had to get to, and on my way there, I had to go over this crossroads, and the crossroad had been shelled or bombed, and I couldn't get round it or through it. And I looked at the map I had and thought, gosh, you know, how am I going to get to where I've got to go to? And then I saw a man in the field, a Frenchman in the field with a French farmer. And so I got out of the truck and ran over to him. And he looked a bit frightened of me running towards him, but I didn't speak any French. But anyway, so I got to him and I pointed to my map and said that this was here and I had to get there. And, you know, asked him as best I could, how was I going to get round here? And he just threw up his hands and ran away crying, Bosch return, Bosch return. So I thought, well, welcome to France, John. That wasn't the end of the things that day, because I thought, well, I'll have to do this. So I turned myself around somehow and went back and round some lanes. Anyway, I got to where on the road to where I was going. And going along there, the road started to be shelled. And I'd done what I'd always, you know, we'd always been taught to, just stop the engine, jump out of the truck and run away from the truck. Which I did do. As I was running away, I noticed that quite near hand was a man up the pole, a Royal Signal. My thoughts were, blimey, you better get down quick. I dived into this overgrown ditch, and bang, after a little while, something landed on top of me. And actually, it was a bloke who'd landed on top of me. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I said, it's okay. I said, I'm all right. He said, well, I said, no, just stay as you are. It's all right. You know, we're all right down here. And this went on for a few minutes, I suppose. And then I said, OK, it's all right, we'll get up now. We got up, and when I got up, it was a fellow who lived down my street, in a block of flats down my street.